Jaquanda Johnson is the Flint journalist who started her own publication to tell the stories of the Flint water crisis that no one else was bothering to tell. On this episode of Created Equal, my conversation with Flint journalist Jaquanda Johnson.
It was founded on the principle,
we hold these truths to be self-evident,
that all men are created equal.
That all men are created equal. Yeah.
My next guest is Jaquanda Johnson. She is the founder of Flint Beat, and she is also its publisher. She's a journalist who's got almost two decades of experience, and she was covering Flint water crisis here when she decided that Flint needed its own publication focused only on Flint, and Flint Beat was launched March 13th, 2017 to fill that need. Jaquanda, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me about when you started to cover the Flint water crisis.
I've had the privilege of working in three newsrooms, including my own, since the water crisis. When I first became concerned about the water, it was in 2014. We had a series of boil advisory alerts throughout the city. It was confusing, and I happened to be at NBC 25. And I remember being in a newsroom, and a council person called, and there was a boil advisory alert. A council person called, and he was saying his nephew had drank the water, and he was throwing up blood. The well producer, Matt Bleicher, he looked at me, and he said, this water thing is not over. He was like, this is just the beginning. And we kept an eye on it locally. All the local newsrooms, they were writing collections of stories about this rash of boil advisory alerts. It just wasn't getting picked up nationally. After that, you know, like I have family predominantly on the north end of Flint. And when the crisis did catch national attention and lead kits started rolling out, my grandfather is almost 90 and he lives on the north end of Flint in the first ward. And I remember going to his home, his lead kit was on the counter. And I'm like, hey, granddaddy, you know, you're not getting your water tested. He said, I stopped using the water when it connected to the Flint River. You know, being a person from Flint, I'm 43, born and raised in the Flint area. I just remember the stories and that we would say about the Flint River and the things that you could find in the Flint River and just, you know, from being around here. And so I guess in one breath, I was surprised that he hadn't tested his water. But then in another, I wasn't surprised that he didn't want to drink the water,
yeah.
You know. And so my journey really was from a very, very personal experience as I watched my family go through it, or a cousin calling me first thing in the morning because she woke up and someone overnight had delivered all these cases of water and left them on their porches. You know, in one breath, she said she wanted to be grateful, but in another way, she was embarrassed about this whole crisis and the struggles that Flint was going through. Or my ex-husband, he lived in the city of Flint, and I remember getting the mail, and my daughter had a food benefit card. I hadn't applied for it, but somewhere in there, it was noted that she spent time in the city of Flint. I live 2 minutes outside of the city now. And so in feeling angry about that, and being from this community, and seeing people out and going to these meetings, and some going as a community member, but not necessarily media. So I've been privy to a lot of behind-the-door conversation as we took this journey. It's just been a roller coaster of emotion. And even being here, because I read Dr. Mona's book, you know, it gave me an excuse to read a book because this has worked for me. And I read the book, and now I'm sitting here, I'm shaking a little because I just started taking this journey, and it reopened up some wounds and emotions that I didn't know were still there and that I have to still kind of navigate through. Wow.
So in February of 2016, you were quoted in Media Matters for America saying, the Flint water crisis went under the media's radar. It was lost in what's trending on Twitter, who liked what on Facebook, and the next poppin' pics on Instagram. Journalists have become lazy. We wait for the obvious and jump on trends. Flint's water crisis didn't make the social media cut, so it was missed. It didn't make headlines like the Charleston killings, Ferguson protests over Michael Brown's death, or Ed Garner's choking. Is it racism? Is it classism? Is it both or neither? I don't know. So that's 3 years ago. That's
3 years ago. Yeah. I still had the fire in me.
Do you feel the same way now about how the media has handled this?
Of course I do. Yeah. And I'm part of the media. I know that there are things that need to be FOIA'd, issues that need to be looked at. There's so many health issues in Flint right now that no one is looking at. That it's just a daunting task. I'm one person in my newsroom. And last year, we had the Society of Environmental Journalists here. And I gave a tour of the city of Flint, and I took them on a real tour. We went on the east side. We went on the north side. They went to a senior center. And what I told these journalists, there's about 40 of them, and I said, you know, I said, I'm glad you're here. I said, but if you do not tell these stories, if you do not write about this, you may as well not be here at all. I think I've seen maybe 5 stories. With 40 news reporters, I have 40 news reporters standing in a yard on the north end of Flint talking to one of the youngest Legionnaires cases that the city's had. She has since died, you know. So I feel like, as a journalist, no, we're not doing our jobs. We use excuses. We talk about management and our hands being tied with metrics and analytics. But we got this beautiful thing called the internet. You know, if we just took a little time and used our voices to shed light on these issues and tapped into the resources we have, we could be doing a much better job.
So that's a great way to segue to talk about FlintBeat, which you founded to try to do this differently, right?
Yeah, I'm trying. Again, I'm a newsroom of one. On occasion, I do get freelancers. I have a really, really great young man named Andrew Roth that covers state news for me. He's just awesome. That was sent by way of another local journalist, Tom Sumner. I have a list of about 40 stories right now that I've had for about a year and a half, and they're still not.
40 stories you feel like need to be done.
They need to be done. Yeah. And no other news outlet has did them. We have 3 TV stations here in Flint. We have 1 legacy newspaper here in Flint. Myself, and I can think of 3 other niche publications here in the city of Flint. And it's just not being done. The stories are just not being reported. As it's been said many times before, Flint is not just in a water crisis. We have other issues in this city. And I just don't think that we're doing our jobs.
So talk about the effect of your journalism, which is now separate from, you know, the legacy institutions and organizations in town. Is it having an effect on those organizations? Is it saying to them effectively, you know, change the way you do things and maybe pay more attention to these things?
I don't know. I work well with 1 TV news station here. So this is what happens to me. I get stories all the time. I get phone calls, I get emails, and I'm not one of those publishers or media owners that really cares that I have to be first or I have to be the only publication to do this story. And so when I don't have time, I share. And so I have 1 TV station that worked really well with me. If I called a reporter, gave a tip, they will get on it. I just don't see them as my competition. And it's because the way I approach news, I'm a Flint girl. And so I start with Flint and then I work my way up. For me, what's important is the residents' voice, the community's voice, not what elected officials have to say, even though I love the congressman. I just feel like that these are the people who haven't been heard. And I never say voiceless. They have a voice. They just didn't have a platform. I serve as that platform, that vehicle, so that if they have an issue, they can be heard. I have literally written a story about a bacterial issue in Flint that no other agency was covering, called the health department, was lied to, and then the next day they drop a press release about that bacteria. You know, it's just so much that needs to be done here. I don't know what effect I have outside of, I remember covering City Hall, working my butt off and looking up, and finally they started sending someone to. You know, I had a journalist tell me, well, you've been covering City Hall every day. It seems like they finally sent me out here, you know, which is great because I just want the city covered. I just want us to have an impact. I just want us to empower and inform the community. And so I guess for me, I don't have the agendas. I'm not making the salaries, you know, that some newsroom managers make. I don't really care about the clicks and the metrics. I don't. You know, I care that when I go to a meeting or if I'm out in the community with my kids, somebody says, hey, I read that story. Or because I read that story, or I didn't know that. That's really how I gauge things. And I'm out there enough to be able to do it.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
That way.
Do you think the crisis itself might not have unfolded the way it did if media had been paying attention differently than they were?
That's a loaded one. I know it would have. It's at one point, we had something called investigative reporting, right? You know, and it was a beautiful thing. You know, as a journalist, you was a watchdog over these systems. And you didn't care if ads were selling. You was just out there to make a difference in communities. I think that when the talks of the switch started, when they said, we're considering doing this, as journalists, we should have dug deeper, including the history of Flint. I mean, some stuff was too obvious. You know, the factories being here, the reasons why the city wasn't connected to the Flint River anyway. The river's always been there, right? And so we should have been asking those questions, and we weren't. And now we're here. And I say we. I include myself. At the time, I was not in Michigan. But I include myself in that. I should have asked more questions, too. In 2014, I was working in a newsroom.
You recently wrote about Mayor Karen Weaver, who is seeking re-election. Has she put in enough effort to deal with this crisis?
There you go again.
you wrote about it.
I wrote so many stories. but I think that, no. And then that's all transparency there. I think that her coming in, she was very green, new to politics. You know, I think that there was so much damage done and so much baggage there that it was impossible for her to come in as green as she was, as new as she was, and tackle a problem like this. I feel the same about some of the people she put in place in departments. This was a crisis that no one had a book to navigate through this. And if you were not a person that already knew the systems and how to work it, that made it even worse. Like, I'm still confused as to why Flint's infrastructure is not done. You know, what's taking so long replacing these pipes? You know, why do we keep going left and right when there's this straight line? You know, just replace the pipes. I think that if the people who did the damage had to do the repair, we might be in a better place. You know, I think that that should have really been state-led for that to happen. But we're in a situation of learning when we need experts.
Expand the critique there to leadership more generally. Oftentimes we see crisis inspire leadership or new leadership in communities, and that new leadership comes forward and does things differently and maybe gets things done more effectively. Has that started to happen here in Flint, in your opinion? Are you anticipating that it will?
Oh, yeah. I think the crisis birthed some really, really strong community activists, people who probably didn't know they had it in them until the crisis happened, right? We started to see new faces, new people popping up at city council, folks protesting. They're just ready. but they're the same people today. It's like the same faces that I saw when this crisis caught in the national spotlight are the same faces that I see at every meeting, on every panel, every protest. You know, I would have liked it to expand more, but they are there. They are working. They need self-care. Remember that. If you see an activist, give them a hug. Because this is hard work. We're talking about a city of almost 100,000 people, almost. Those numbers have dropped. And maybe 15 to 20 strong activists that they even have like these inner turmoils and things and can't come together and work. And there's all these little different fights that I see, you know, but this is one young lady, Ariana Hawk. Ariana lived on the south side of Flint in a low-income apartment complex. Since the crisis, her son has been featured on Time Magazine. She pops up at City Hall protesting. She's out there with Get Out to Vote. You know, it's a transition that in her life she probably never expected it to happen. You know, she was living on the south side, a low-income mother on the south side of Flint, and then a water crisis happened, and it hit her family really hard. You know, so to see young people like that, vocal, still doing her, still rocking her Jordans with her little flavor, you know, but she's making an impact, and she's reaching people her age. She's reaching millennials that some of us, we just can't reach them.
Before we started today, you were talking to me about how big of an issue crime is in Flint. Talk, and that is another issue that's not getting the attention that it should. Talk about what's going on there.
I think it's getting attention, but not how we should approach it. One of our goals at Flint Beat was to introduce solutions journalism to the city. And that is not just focusing on a problem, but seeing how the community is maybe coming together to solve it or how other communities are solving it. And so we have a page dedicated to gun violence. And in it, we wrote a story about cure violence and violence interrupters and what this looks like and how it's being implemented in other communities. I think that, of course, we see the stories that say, you know, X, Y, and Z was shot on this day, they're dead. But we don't see, oh, maybe we need to take this to the community and have conversation and start organizations, you know, right in the thick of these communities with people who are from those communities, people that are recognized in those communities, people that neighbors know, so that we can decrease this. Like, what does that look like? We're not even looking at things like that. We automatically look at things like, we need more police. That might not be the answer. And in my research, I'm finding out it isn't. You know, we just need a stronger community base and support right there where it's happening. Because one neighbor, one person in the community could find out that somebody is having an issue with another person in the community, and they might be able to intercede. But as it stands right now, we keep looking at more police, more service people, instead of us taking back our communities, the places we live in where this is happening. You know, they're looking at it from afar. They're looking from downtown, right? You know, we don't even have enough police officers to patrol the whole city. So they're looking from afar, and we need to do it right there where it is, the heart of the problem, and step up and take care of our neighborhoods. That's the only way it's going to get done.
Go ahead.
Dr. Mona, in her book, she said, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. And she quoted Dr. Seuss the Lorax. That's a powerful statement. If they are not like you, if they haven't been through your journey, they might not understand you or what you need to get the job done, right? So ain't nobody better to do it but you. And so we have to start thinking like that instead of looking for these officials and these people to take care of us. We can take care of each other. It starts with our neighborhoods and our communities and us.
Okay, Jaquanda Johnson of Flint Beat, thanks very much for being here. Thank
On the next episode of Created Equal, we'll talk with the first mayor in the country to successfully push to remove all lead water lines in his city.
Our kids are drinking this water, so we just assume the answer would be everything's fine. That here's the data, here's the testing. Surely we're testing the water for lead. But actually, there was a real issue, and we were convinced, and so we decided the lead pipes had to go.
Created Equal is a production of WDET, Detroit's NPR station. Our executive producer is Joan Cherry Isabella. Our producers are Elena Frugé, Jake Neer, and Anna Marie Seisling. Our sound engineers are Matt Trevethan, Rowan Niamisto, and Rasan Cherry. Senior editor and musical composer is Sam Bobian. Our digital and social media team is Maida Stange, Shiraz Ahmed, and Tony Brown. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson.